Hello, everyone, and welcome back again to the Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Kara French. We are back again delving into all things revenue, the technology, emerging market trends, some interesting industry perspectives, and my favorite, of course, the occasional off-the-wall conversation. We are glad you've joined us again for episode 5 in the series. Make sure you've checked out our previous episodes, which you can find on billingplatform.com. We are excited to be here today talking about all things digital payments with Alon Binyamin. He is the Financial Processes Development Lead with Go Cardless, which is a global leader in account-to-account payments, making it easy to collect both recurring and one-off payments directly from customers' bank accounts. We asked him here today to get his perspectives about the timely topic of changes and updates to digital payments for both businesses and customers alike. It's a constantly evolving area, and it's important to have an understanding of the complexity that's required to create volumes of safe transactions that support the payment and revenue processes. So one of the things we're hoping to get to know more about today is how businesses, both at the enterprise level and small businesses, can manage and keep up with the latest in digital payments. So Alon, we're so glad to have you with us. Thank you for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, that's absolutely. Before we get started with all the questions, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and just your background?
Sure. I'll keep it short. I have roughly 10 years of experience in performance improvement. That includes processes, procedures, controls, system implementation, and alike. About 6 years of those were in EY. And currently, as you've mentioned, I'm in Go Cardless, as the mostly focusing on financial processes. My more academic background is accountancy, law, which mostly tax I've dealt with in the past, and an MBA from London Business School.
Okay. So you mentioned now you're with Go Cardless. How long have you been there at Go Cardless?
Roughly 4 years.
Roughly 4 years. So just in that time, I'm sure things have just changed. And, you know, it seems like every time I Google anything revenue, we're looking at any search about revenue, this topic of digital payments comes up. I mean, it's the buzzword. It's kind of on everybody's mind. It's just this frequent term. And I think it kind of gets thrown around a little bit. Maybe people don't know exactly what it is, what some of the newer trends are with it. So what are some of the latest trends in so-called this digital payment technology, and what are the benefits that these trends provide both the payer and then the banks or merchants or people involved in these transactions?
You're absolutely right. Things are changing continuously. It's a really dynamic kind of market and environment. If we're talking about, so I want to separate between recent trends and just the general term of like digital payment, because digital payments have been here for a while, right? Credits, credit cards, whatever, online payments. That as itself is not new, but we keep seeing more and more different kind of ways of tapping into it. It could be digital wallets. It could be, I don't know, e-cash, all sorts of buy now, pay later, crypto, obviously. It's coming from all kind of all directions. We in Go Cardless, we don't deal with all of those. We have a kind of a more very specific, focus, and we have a very specific vision, right, to basically become the leading entity in moving payments between account to account. Now, when I say account, I mean bank account. As far as recent trends are concerned, I think that, first of all, we can't ignore the current economic conditions, right? We have increasing costs, there's tightening of budgets, payment collectors, let's call them merchants, we call them merchants, don't necessarily want to keep kind of passing the cost on to their customers, and they're looking for other ways to go about it. And they have several options, right? They can, for example, reduce fraud. Fraud is always the case in online payments. They can improve conversion. They can reduce number of contract, you know, fewer suppliers, better deals, and so on, and all sorts of other elements around payments, right? Mm-hmm. And that is one, I guess, one of the aspects, let's call them one of our customer groups that we handle, the merchants. There is another customer group, which are actually the payers, right? And the payers have changing preferences as well. I know about an internal research we've done that showed that about 89% of payers worldwide trust bank payments more than any other payment method.
Wow, that's interesting.
It's very interesting, but it's not really surprising when you hear about it. Banks have always, throughout history, were kind of the more fine, old, maybe a bit slow, maybe a bit kind of outdated,
standard,
but more trustworthy institutions. Especially in a world where you have a lot more kind of fintechs and different ways of paying, kind of moving payments, banks, I guess, still kept that old school trust that is ingrained with people.
Sure.
So it is something that worth paying kind of attention to. As far as, I would say, bank payments, when I say bank payment, I kind of separate it. We tend to separate it in three, let's call it, categories, right? A push, which basically you log into your bank account and you push an amount to another bank. A pull, where usually, let's say, the merchant or the business pulls money from your account via, most likely, is direct debit. And then there is something new that's evolving, which is kind of an initiated push. An initiated push is where fundamentally you're the one pushing the money into the business account or into whoever it is you want to pay, but the act, the transactional act, was initiated by the collector, by the merchant, by the business. Okay. It's kind of a checkout flow, right? The merchant initiates something, but then they send you into a logging into your bank and then kind of an approval to actually send the money. That was kind of a side note.
Okay, that's interesting. I've never heard of initiated push. So that's okay. So what are some of the benefits of doing businesses with, you know, this tradition with bank payments? What are those?
So if we're talking about benefit, I would kind of break it down into the following. First of all, there's cost. Fundamentally, banks, that's what they do. That's what they're designed to do. And payment, kind of bank payments, inherently are cheaper. There's less intermediates. There's more kind of total cost of ownership, right? So usually if you go through a credit card payment, first of all, there's the credit card cut or a digital wallet. There's the digital wallet owner cut, right? But also it complicates your processes most of the time. So the entire ownership of actually dealing with a payment, collecting it, registering it in your systems, and so on, tends to be higher. So there is definitely reduced processing, both in the direct cost of the payment and costs around the process. Again, internal kind of researchers, we found something like 56% lower costs by transferring from card to bank payments. So in a world where you can see economical conditions that increase costs, that can definitely be of help. Second kind of benefit for bank payment is increasing payment success. As I said, one of the problems is retention or conversion. Credit cards, there's roughly an average failure rate of about 8%. Bank payments significantly lower, between 1% and 2%. It makes sense. Bank accounts tend to be more stable. You don't change bank accounts more often. People don't change bank accounts more often than credit cards. There's sure. less failures and so on.
Right.
In direct connection to that, there's also reduced churn. So another benefit is reduced churn. We all know that any point of friction with a payer or with a customer, especially on some sort of an ongoing recurring type of business connection, any point of friction is a risk of churn. And every time you have to send an email saying, hey, your payment method is haywire, I need an update, that's a risk of churn. Anytime a payment failed and you need to chase someone, say, oh, your payment failed, we need a new payment, please, that's a risk of churn. Credit card expire, about 10, 15% of card payments, I think, turn into churn and bad debt, whereas bank accounts are more stable. Transferring bank accounts usually includes also transfer of all existing payments. It's a relatively common service banks provide. So the payment success and just natural human behavior with bank accounts usually lead to significantly less churn. And the last one is speed. When you don't have to jump hoops and between a lot of intermediaries, you can move money very kind of quickly, directly from one account to another, right? So banking payments move about 7 times faster than credit cards usually.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, that's roughly, I would say, the big benefits of bank payments. Of course, we need to remember that not everything fits everything. Different you know, business practices or use cases require different types of what we call payment railways, right? The payment rails, the form by which you move money between one point and another, right? So direct debit are not going to be the best case scenario for all purposes, whereas other maybe payment rails can be.
Okay, so we've talked about a little bit about digital payments, sort of, you know, getting that set up, but that there's a lot going on there, right? There's a lot of different types of payments. There's a lot of different ways that they can be initiated. So from a business perspective, you know, introducing this, you know, one of these different types, or if you've just been doing traditional credit card transactions or whatever it may be, I know it's constantly changing. There's new challenges. There's risks to the business. So what kinds of things are required to handle like the security, the volume of these transactions? You're doing, you know, millions of these transactions per day. What are some of the steps that businesses can take to avoid something like fraud, for example?
Right. So volume is definitely an issue, and volume becomes an issue all by itself. It's not even a multiplier at a certain point. And yes, if you work with really high volumes, I would say, first of all, operationally, you need a very slick type of process, right? You want really need to minimize manual work. You really need to minimize cases where human beings need to interject into the process, because if it's okay when you're dealing with maybe hundreds, it's not okay when you're dealing with millions of transactions. With volume comes different aspects, right? So if putting the operational aside, and I'll get back to it later, you do need to remember that fraud is by itself a problematic item, and fraud really grows linearly, and sometimes even more than linearly, as you have more volume. You become a target at a certain point where you really have a lot of volume of processing. I think, as far as I remember, there was an annual fraud report from UK Finance, which basically said that the UK loses 1.2 billion a year for fraud.
Wow.
That's a lot of money going for basically zero value.
That is a lot of money for zero value. Absolutely. It's
basically, what is it, 2,300 per minute.
Oh, there's
about 3 million cases, I think, across the UK for 2022. So fraud is definitely something that needs paying attention when you work in volumes. The issue with that is that there is no one single point. There's no one single entity in the entire chain, kind of value chain, that can just solve fraud.
Right.
It doesn't work like that. You need a collaboration. You need improvements across the entire payment industry and beyond that to improve and to kind of fix it. And you see attempts, you see changes, but there really is, if talking about kind of trends and changes, you really see more and more focus around it as we see, you know, more and more different types of payment getting introduced and the world become more connected as far as payments are concerned. Things, on the one hand, you want things to move faster and conveniently, but you're kind of exposing yourself unless you pay attention to fraud. Fraud, by the way, usually we split it into two. There's kind of authorized fraud. So basically, that's where the payer approves the payment, but the recipient is not who we think it was, right? And versus unauthorized fraud, where basically money is taken unbeknownst to the payer.
Right.
If we split the two, unauthorized card payment, for example, is a multiple by value of authorized payments, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is changing, talking about trends, is open banking. And we can definitely deep dive into open banking in a minute, but I would just say in kind of a small note that open banking has authorization built in into the process, and it can really help with that. So if you're thinking about fraud, that's definitely something to think about. And what can be done, I guess, against fraud? The problem is that when banks receive a transaction, they have to make a decision quickly, right? Whether it is or isn't a fraudulent activity. It needs to happen quickly because you can't just, you know, get the entire transaction stuck for hours until you verify it. And they also have to do it with very, very limited information. They basically know to who, from whom, amount, and that's basically it, right? There are several things that are happening in the entire industry right now. For example, trying to add all sorts of additional information alongside the payment, things like what is the place, what is the identity, and so on. And that could really help the entire industry as a whole tackle fraud. So if to summarize, if we're talking about what are the issues with volume, usually is operational issues. You need automation, you need decrease of manual labor. And the second one is fraud. You really have to pay attention to fraud when you're starting to work in high volumes.
So you were talking about, we're talking about fraud, but you said, you mentioned open banking has authorization built in. How, I mean, we've all heard the term open banking. I know it's not as new anymore and things are continuing to evolve there. So is that a shift in the type of transactions or more people going to this open banking concept?
So open banking is definitely evolving. You know, some places in the world kind of are more ahead than others. Also, open banking is not just one thing across the entire world. There are many different, let's call them structures and decisions and regulation to some extent, that is called open banking, that we call kind of in one single name open banking, but they're called different in different regions of the world. But fundamentally, I would say is it's about the ability of banks and banking systems and also external parties to very easily talk to the banking system and request and push information. Once you open and standardize those kind of, let's say, communication channels, it allows you to do things very much more efficiently and significantly more reliable and securely.
Yes, that's secure.
That was what I was referring to previously. Okay. So, okay, if for example, if you receive a payment request via open banking, it's not like the merchant, the business talks to your bank directly, and you're kind of left out of the loop. That's not usually what happens. What happens is that you are sent to your bank by the merchant, by the business, and then you approve, you yourself log into your bank account and then approve a payment. The act of forcing you to log into your bank account means that the bank can rely on its own logging security, which is usually very secure, to approve a payment. Now, everything else is very convenient. You don't really have to set it up and type the bank account and type the amount. All of that is initiated via the business that is collecting the payment, but you still have to log in and approve the payment. That is basically they've taken the security aspect of it and kind of detached it from the entire chain, which improves both convenience and security. Open banking, as I said, it's not really new anymore, right? So I think GC was working with the first test environment in something like 2017. It's not really new. I know that UK has something like 7 million active open banking users, and it's growing rapidly. Even the tax authorities here, like the HMRC, are collecting, I think, 12 billion in tax using open banking. So I think it's not fair to call it new, but it's definitely not as prevalent as it should be, I think, in the long future. The long-term future.
Yeah. And Go Cardless, you guys are working with open banking, I assume, you know, currently and have been for some time.
Yeah. Go Cardless is, it's not only working with, like, we are prominent Go Card. It's not me. it's our product team and our regulatory team, right? We are very prominent in the forefront of open banking. So there's also an act of kind of, I guess we are active members in even designing some of the things to some extent. But as far as the users are concerned, it's about what functionality exists right now that we service, and they're already functional and more to come.
So, you know, we were talking about this sort of overarching sort of system of these multi-channel payments and, you know, payer preferences and the flexibility that I think, you know, even customers are sort of demanding now, right? I mean, these are changes that are continuing to happen. Are there business benefits to sort of embracing all these different types of payment methods?
So absolutely. But you need to know what you're embracing and for what. As I said, there's no one solution fit all in payment methods. For example, direct debit is cheap. It's reliable. You control as the business, you control the collection. But it's a bit slow. You need to set it up in advance. There's regulatory, a lot of places there's regulation requires pre-noticing, kind of notice sent to the payers and so on. So if you're going to try and use direct debit for an online purchase, for example, it's not really going to work. You need the money immediately, right? You need to know that you're receiving the money before you release the merchandise. However, if you take all of the different rails that exist, so you take direct debit and you tag on open banking and you have some sort of more robust and sophisticated way of collecting a payment while also selecting the right way to collect the payment for each scenario, you can definitely inject value both inwards to yourself as kind of the business and outwards to payers. I'll just give kind of a couple of examples. Open banking features, right? There's payments called, let's call them instant bank payments, which basically allow you to move money immediately from account to account. So you don't have to rely on the direct debit. And then the direct debit can maybe be set up immediately at the point of purchase to be for the long-term future kind of collection, right? In that case, you get both the immediacy of the open banking and the decreased cost of direct debits. You can use what's called, you can increase your security, what's called verified mandate. It basically uses kind of account information services to tap into the bank account and understand that the person paying to me or the person I'm paying for is really the person that I'm expecting. So you kind of avoid those approved fraud cases or at least minimize them to some extent. There is open banking. We have kind of acquired an open banking provider, a company called Nordigen, located in Latvia. And what they do and what we do right now is also enrich the data that we receive from those account information services. So not only do you get the raw basic information, but then you can also tag on top of that some sort of AI and get some more enriched risk scores and so on. So there's a lot of value just in that front. But if you go back to saying, okay, let's look at other aspects of it, right? So for example, if we discussed the merchant before, so the merchant said, okay, cost, increased payment success, reducing a churn, speed, we've talked about all of that. But if you look at the payer's preferences, for example, so payers, they care about security, obviously. They want ease of payments because no one wants to hassle when they just want to pay something, right? And maybe a bit surprising, usually when payers just want to pay for something, they want the money to leave their accounts right away.
Hey, I understand that completely.
Yeah. I know that as a business, you tend to delay expense and you know, bring forward revenue and kind of makes business sense. But as a payer, a lot of time you just want to get it over with.
You want
the security of it. Yeah.
Is this a generational difference too? I mean, I'm thinking of myself here, but I want my payments done quickly, easily, efficiently, so I can look and know, hey, exactly what I've paid and what I still have to pay.
I think that the speed and security, that's not really a generational difference, but the openness to different types of payments and different kind of venues is definitely a generational difference, right? Again, internal research, about 38% of the age group of between 25 and 35 years old say they're definitely willing to use some sort of call it variable recurring payments. So it's kind of the recurring version of open banking. And that is something that it's kind of surprising that 38% said they're willing to use that, where a significant portion of the population won't even understand what variable recurring payment is, right? It's not a thing top of mind, but when you're talking to the younger generation, it's not new and it's not scary for them. It's right there and they're used to it. And there are payment method preferences, right? So traditional debit, credit cards, bank to bank transfers and so on. People do prefer different types of payments on an individual basis. So you can group it up and so on. But if you as a business, if you can provide a variety of payment methods, it's almost guaranteed to give some sort of beneficial.
Right, you're expanding your reach there in terms of
exactly
so meeting your customer needs and you know by offering all the different payments. Absolutely,
because people will drop off if they don't see their preferred payment method. Like high percentages, again, our research or research that exists says something like 60-70% of payers will stop the purchase if their payment method is not available. And
wow, that's really high.
That's very high. Thinking about myself, I go to an online purchase and I go to the checkout and you know it's only this, but it's not that. And like I don't know, I prefer to use that payment preference. A lot of the time, it gives me pause. And if it's really a payment method I'm not comfortable with, yeah, there's always other options to usually
absolutely
to buy what you want. Yeah.
Yeah, I think about myself too. There's been several times where you think, I don't really need this, or do I need it this? You want to know your transactions are secure. You want to provide as you know your customers with that level of security. What are the payment service providers doing in all this to make things more secure?
So, because of the obviously payment service providers, they're kind of aggregators, right? Way too many different types of payment emerging and showing up, and it becomes kind of a hassle. And then the payment service provider say, okay, you just deal with us, and we know how to talk to all of these different kind of you know payment types, right? So a lot of them have emerged, and they're trying to kind of orchestrate everything from a single platform. Once you orchestrate or you try to orchestrate a lot from a single platform, you're very well positioned to inject some security into it. You're exposed to a lot of information. You see different patterns of behavior, especially if you're big and there's more and more volumes, right? You can count on the patterns. You have cross-references between the different types of behaviors and payment. If you're operating in different regions, you can compare that. So payment service providers, on the one hand, they started off as a point of convenience, I guess, but they're actually not kind of very well positioned to inject some security measurement into their entire process. It's never, and as I said, no one actor can solve fraud.
Solve everything.
Exactly. Yeah. But they're a prominent player.
Right. I want to go back to something we were talking earlier about, just the volume of transactions and you know, just sort of how things, you have to remove the manual processes. You have to get in front of sort of a larger part of a larger monetization sort of ecosystem, if you will. How does having this digital payments technology sort of fit in with all of the other things that, you know, businesses are doing, you know, billing and payments, revenue recognition, all these things under this billing umbrella? What is having digital payments as a part of that? You know, how can that help your business?
Right. So digital payments, when done correctly, are actually the, I would say, the easiest way for you to inject some efficiency into your processes, right? The problem is that it's very difficult to do them correctly. You need a lot of integration. You need to talk to, you know, the systems need to be, usually you have an operational system and some sort of financial system and maybe a separate billing system. And there's databases and maybe some sort of system to inject some risk decisions into it. And there's a lot, it specifically if we're talking about, let's assume that the billing system is also the system that does the collection, right? Through some sort of a payment gateway, which usually is the case. That system becomes significantly integrated into your almost entire ecosystems in the business. It's a positive upside, but you need to know, like you need to commit to it. If you manage to integrate it properly, if the system is flexible enough and you can tailor it to how you do business and what you need and the pieces of information you need to flow between all your systems, you can set yourself up for a very, very automatic, efficient, low latency type of operation. But that is something that is extremely difficult to do when you're just going to say like, okay, I'm just going to do it slightly. I'm going to take it. I'm going
to. Yeah, you have to commit to having the robust system there. Yeah.
You really need to commit to it. And it doesn't mean that the project itself can be broken down. And that is something that specifically I've been working on for a while, right? It doesn't mean that the project cannot be broken down into smaller pieces, but you don't stop until you hit that end goal where things really flow, smoothly between all the different operations. And once you do that, you not only have you stopped the operational, right, the operational people of the business, be it the billing team, the financial reporting team, the budget people, whoever that is, not only do you stop being a hindrance and a cost center, you transition to be a generator of, I wouldn't say revenue, but a generator of business growth, right? All of a sudden, when the business, and businesses do that all the time, you have a new product, you have a new structure. Once you get to that point, you are not a blocker anymore. You can actually very quickly adapt. You can implement, you can expose insights. So it really is kind of a strategic investment that you need to commit to at a certain point, knowing you're going to bear fruits somewhere along the line. And when that somewhere shows up, that's really every case by case and, you know, company by company.
Right. You mentioned there's no one solution that's going to fit all for every, but are there any like key things in terms of payments that need to be considered when you're looking to go all in, as it were?
So you need to really evaluate yourself. How complex is your operation? How complex is your payment operation, right? How far do you want to reach into that different payment types? You need to pick your partners, be it the system, third-party systems that you put into your ecosystems, or the payment provider, payment service providers that you're working with, right? And no, really no one system / one payment service provider is going to give you everything. But what you need to do is say, okay, what's the minimum amount of items and systems and partners I can work with to get like the maximum amount of coverage and also have them operate very cleanly between one another, right? So it's kind of a matter of maximum coverage with minimum systems and minimum partners. And also flexibility is always key. The best case solution would be everything out of the box is exactly what you need, don't count on it. It's not going to happen.
Right. Things are going to change.
Yeah, it's a nice kind of, it's very nice. If I could get it, but it's just, it doesn't. Companies have their own thing and their own structures, and you need the flexibility to operate, to use your tools as you want to use them.
Yeah, make it work for you. Right. Exactly.
If you're a business and you're growing, and usually these type of decisions are most painful at a business that's growing fast, try and identify the preferences of your audience and of your customers. They're not going to be the same one. They're not going to be the same preferences. Understand that you need a bit of variety in the way you structure your operation, be it the contract structure, be it the payment methods, right? And try to provide a good coverage of different types of payments in order to really minimize that point of purchase churn, and shift, or at least encourage your customers into the structures that you find more beneficial for you. For example, lower cost, lower kind of operational hassle moving forward, and so on. Because there's always overlap in customers' preferences. If you manage to have that clarity regarding your operation and your customer base, I think you're very well set up for success, at least in that front. There's always other things, obviously.
Sure, absolutely. It sounds like setting yourself up that way benefits you and the customer. That's a win-win for everybody there.
Exactly. And that's the point. And those are the best decisions, if you can identify those.
Sure, absolutely. Alon, it's been so great visiting with you today about all things digital payment technology, getting your perspectives and insights. As always with the Revenue Podcast, we want to connect with you. Visit the Billing Platform social media pages and check out our business website at www.billingplatform.com. Make sure that you stay tuned for our next podcast. You don't want to miss an episode. We've got something coming up next month. Really exciting, and can't wait to talk to you guys about it then. We'll be back then with new insights and new perspectives on all things revenue. Thank you for listening and for having your cup of coffee, tea, or whatever makes you happy with us. Cheers.